Hi, this is Keith Whidden, and welcome to Story Mosaics. Hey, I promised you that periodically we just rip a page out of my life and tell you a few of the stories that I've encountered. And so that's what we're going to do for today. And I'm so excited because actually it's just, these are just fun stories intended both to, I guess, sober us up and not take ourselves too seriously. And then also just to give ourselves a little bit of a chuckle. And so I'm going to go back a few years in my life and I'm going to tell you two stories actually that kind of pair up very nicely with one another. And they tell me that, well, I tell a lot of stories that are a little bit self-deprecating. That is, they are not so flattering to my life. And one of those stories happens to be about fear, or actually a whole category of the stories happen to be about fear, because maybe I'm a little bit more fearful than what I recognized. But this one goes all the way back to when I was a freshman at college. My dad was the operations manager at Ellis Airs over in Lafayette Square. And for those of you who are not familiar with Indianapolis, we lived on the far north side in Carmel at 99th is Keystone. And my dad's place of employment was all the way around, about three quarters of the way around the city in Lafayette Square on the west side. Now, I have to tell you, I'm pretty proud of my dad because my dad had an eighth grade education. You see, when he was growing up, that was considered ample education for what he would need in his future. There was no talk of college. There was no talk of future. He had that eighth grade education. He ended up going into the service. He ended up getting a GED, and he worked his tail off, frankly. Most of my life, he worked three jobs. He sold carpet. He cleaned the schools. And then he worked as the operations manager for Ellis Airs. Now, some of you are not familiar with that name, Ellis Airs, but many of you are, because Airs is like a Macy's or like a major department store in the Indianapolis area. And so he had a very responsible position. My dad could, quote, cipher with the best of them. I remember he could figure out things in his head that would take me two pages of writing to figure out. That's just the way Dad was. And so one of his responsibilities with that operations manager position was that if there was ever a break-in or something that went bad in the middle of the night, he had to take care of it. So that's where this story begins. You see, that night, about 12:30, I heard the phone ring and I heard my dad answer it. My bedroom was adjacent to my parents' bedroom there, and I heard my dad answer it. Remember, I was a freshman in college and I frankly had just gone to sleep, but I heard him talking in some muffled tones, but there was also an urgency in his voice that I knew that something big was happening. And he got out of bed, he got dressed, and he came into the room. He said, "Hey, there's been a break-in over at the department store. Do you want to go with me?" Hey, it sounded exciting to me. And so I threw on some clothes and we drove 22 minutes. I remember him saying that over and over and over again. We drove the 22 minutes from our house right down to getting on 465, going around 465 to Lafayette Square Mall and heading into the department store, Ellis Airs store. Now, here was the deal. The police were already there. The alarms had gone off, and it was a silent alarm. And specifically, it was the alarm that was in the jewelry section of the store. And so we kind of had a location of where there had been someone in that store. And when we got there, there was a broken window that was on the outside of the store there, and the police were all there. And frankly, they could not enter the building until my dad was there to give them access. He didn't need to use the key because we could have walked through the plate glass that was broken, but he unlocked the door, pulled it open, and we walked through. The dog that was there to sniff out the location of any criminal that might be inside the store was anxious to get to his job. He was looking forward to finding the criminal that might be still harbored within the store. There were three floors to the store, and I knew them well because I'd been there so many times with my father on more normal occasions. But on this occasion, there was a heightened anxiety and anxiousness, even, might I say, fear, because of what had gone down. We didn't know whether the perpetrator was armed. We didn't know what he had or she had stolen. We had no idea of any of the connections that he might have to the store. All we knew was that we were there to give the police access and let the dog work. I remember that occasion so much. And it was so interesting. I think that's what got me into dog training later on. I happened to be a person who has trained several leader dogs for blind individuals. And I love training dogs. Although I have to tell you, if you follow me on Facebook, I think I might have a dog that's incorrigible. But that's another story for another day. Actually, he's in the background. And whenever I start a podcast, it's so funny because he goes, gets in the kennel and just lays there and listens to the podcast. I wish there was a way I could get him to like or follow me. But so far, Weston doesn't like or follow me on my podcast. But so back to the story. So we got into the store and I watched this dog take off and seemingly indiscriminate in his search, but he went straight for the area that was the jewelry section, which was kind of in the back center of the store there. And he sniffed around and suddenly got on some kind of scent, headed towards the door and stood there at the door. Again, they walked him in a little further. They released him. He released right back to the jewelry section, right back to the door. Three times they did that. And they looked at each other and they said, Bill, I don't think he's here. That's my dad's name. Bill, I don't think the guy's still here. I think he probably left through the glass door there. Now, had we paid attention, we would have recognized that the glass was broken outward. So yeah, he was gone. At least we thought so. So anyway, they said, well, we're going to wrap this up. Bill, you need to secure the store, reset the alarms, and then you can leave. And that's probably why my dad brought me, because we could get the job done a whole lot quicker. I mentioned it was already after 12 and it was almost 1:30, almost going on 2 when we got our part of the job done in terms of getting the police satisfied that there was not a criminal in the building. My dad said, Keith, I'm going to take the third and the first floor, secure it into the mall. And then up on the third floor, there was access to the rooftops. The air conditioning, the heating units, all of that was on the roof. My dad would secure that. Then he'd come down to the area where the tellers and the finance area of the store was. And that was also where there was a safe. And then he would come and he would meet me down back down on first floor. My job was pretty simple, frankly. My job was simply to get into the store, go around and check all of the different areas in the department and make sure that any exits or entrances, emergency exits and entrances, had not been violated, that they were still secured. I went through my setup. Dad went through his. We came down to the first floor. My dad reset the alarm. It wouldn't go. So he said, we're going to have to go through it again. Somewhere, somehow, there's a door ajar, and we want to make sure we find it. I can't leave until we do. So Dad went up to the third floor again, out onto the rooftop. I went and secured all the locks and all the doors that I could find on the second floor, and then I was to meet him down on the first floor. Came back down to the first floor, took the stairway, the escalator, actually, down to the first floor, he reset the alarm and it wouldn't take. He was a little frustrated. I was a little frustrated. And we wondered whether we had missed something, not just the security level, but whether we had missed something in relationship to the criminal that had Probably made away with several thousand dollars worth of jewelry. Dad said, "Okay, let's go through it again, Keith. I'll go on the third floor. I'll meet you down on the first floor. Take the elevator down, and I'll meet you down there on the first floor." Dad went through the third floor, went outside on the rooftop, secured every door, double checked every door. I double checked every door. He went down on the main floor. I got into the elevator this time. That's significant because the elevator would take me down to the first floor and I'd be able to meet him a little bit more expeditiously and closer to the exit and a little bit closer to where we would reset the alarm. Well, that's where tale takes a little bit of a twist. You know, I mentioned to you that I suffer from some fears, and they say that in fear, there are two major responses: fight or flight. Fight or flight. I'm going to tell you there are two more. And not only am I going to let you know there are two more, I'm going to tell you how I've experienced those two. Those two extra emotions when it comes to fear. I pressed the button, came down, and the elevator doors opened right in front of me. Right across the way was a hallway that would turn to the left, and I'd be able to see into the store. There was a wall that was just about 7 feet from me there, and maybe eight. And as I approached that door as it opened, I stepped into the opening and my peripheral vision just caught the image of a man at the end of the hallway. It looked to me like he was holding a gun. Fight? I didn't have it in me. Flight? Nowhere to go. That hallway was only towards him. And so I experienced in this moment one of the third responses to fear, and that is faint. Yeah, fight, flight, or faint. And that's exactly what happened. I just crumbled into this glob of goo of me on the floor there. The next thing I remember is my dad walking down the hall and going, "Keith, Keith, are you okay?" And he grabbed a hold of me and I came to and I said, "Dad, I saw him. I saw the criminal. He's in the store still." He said, "What, help me understand. What did you see exactly?" And I said, "When I stepped out of the elevator, my peripheral vision caught him at the end of the hallway. Dad, I fainted at that moment, but I'm pretty certain he had a gun. We need to be careful." He said, "Did he look like this?" And my dad pointed down the hallway. And there stood a mannequin like this. Oh, I had fainted at a mannequin. Well, needless to say, we were able to get the store locked back up, secured, and we headed for home. I'm 50 years since that occurrence, 50 years since that happened. And I've never forgot it. And my dad, through all of his years of life, never let me forget the incident of the mannequin that stared me down and made me faint. Oh, but I mentioned to you another response. There's fight, flight, faint. Yeah. Let me tell you about another situation. You know, I've mentioned that I have some fears, but there's also some things that are characteristic of who I am and how I make it through my days, so to speak. And one of the things that I have difficulty with is staying awake, especially in some circumstances. When I drive, my wife has to make sure I stay awake. And I remember one time when my stepdaughter Carrie was riding with us, and it was early on in her relationship with our family and how we merged everything. And Carrie taps her mom on the shoulder and says, I think Keith is falling asleep. She's probably right. I've done some of my best sleeping behind the wheel, and not for very long, mind you. I wake up. Well, I also don't work third shift very well. I just can't make it through the night. When I was in seminary, my schedule was such that I needed to work because I needed to pay some bills there, so that I'd come out of seminary with the least amount of debt possible. But that meant that I had to take a third shift job. The way that worked is I would go in at 11. I'd travel from my home in Zion, Illinois, actually Winthrop Harbor. I'd travel down to Bannockburn and Deerfield area, and there was a benefits company there right off the main highway. I'd pull in there at 11 o'clock and I'd clock in, and then I'd set up all of my books and everything that I'd be studying that evening on a desk that was there at the entryway of this three-story building again. And I have to tell you, it was one of those jobs that was so cush. I could do all of this homework and all of my studies. I remember taking Greek while I was working there, and I had already taken Greek in my undergrad at Wheaton, but now I was taking Greek again, a little bit more intense and a little bit more focused on being able to read the text. And I was taking Greek for a second time in my studies at Ted's Theological Ed. Ted's is the divinity school that I went to. It's Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. And so anyway, I was in a pretty good situation. Here's what I had to do. Every half hour, I had to go through the building, and there was this little card that I had to slide through a reader at several different areas around each floor. Well, I hear things when I'm in big buildings at night. And all of my trauma from that incident with the mannequin would come back to me. I was scared to death most evenings when I was running through that building. Yes, I was running through the building. Here's the deal. I could hit those card readers at a full sprint, and I could make it back down to the floor. And all they had to do was read on each level, and I could check that it had gone through. And I could make it back down to the first floor and get back behind my desk where I felt relatively safe. Each night I would get sleepier and sleepier. And one of the things that I did was, here's how my day would happen. I would get off at 7 in the morning. I'd drive my little pickup over to the seminary, which was only about 2 miles away. And I would climb in the back of the little pickup on a mattress, and I would go to sleep. And I'd have 2 hours from about 7:30 till 8:30 to 9:30. And I had a 10 o'clock class that I had to wake up for, and I had to get to that 10 o'clock class. I went from 10 till 2 when I cl came out, climbed back into my truck, went, caught a few more hours sleep from 2, 3, 4. And then at 5 o'clock, I would head home and get dinner ready for my spouse and I. And we'd get started on the evening. And I wanted to have some time at family time. And so what I would do is I would stay awake till about 9 o'clock, and then I'd get an hour and a half sleep, and then I'd head back down and do the shift all over again. I'm telling you, that is not a good pattern for sleep. There was a lot of sleep deprivation going on there. And there were so many nights that I swore I was not going to be able to make it through, but I knew I had to make it through the building. Every period on that period of periodic time, run those card readers through there and get back to my seat. Well, at 6:30 one morning, I just couldn't take it any longer. And I knew my boss's pattern was to come into the building just about 7. Usually I was there at the desk. We would greet one another. He'd say thanks, and I'd go my way. He went his way to his office. He'd go through the card readers, make sure I'd done my job and everything like that. So it was a pretty cush job, I have to admit. I really enjoyed it, and I got a lot of studies down, but that problem was I was sleep deprived. And so one time about 6:30, I couldn't stay awake any longer. So I decided I would just go into the restroom and sit down there, and maybe I just close my eyes just for a few minutes and wake up. I have one of those pretty good internal clocks. If I tell myself I'm going to wake up at 7, I'll wake up at 7. If I tell myself I'll get up at 5 in the morning, I'll get up at 5 in the morning. There's an internal clock. My dad had the same thing that we relied on a great deal. And so I wasn't too fearful. I was pretty certain that when 7 o'clock came, I would be able to wake up. And I sat there and I dozed off. Yeah, way it went down was this. Put my elbow on my knee and my hand on my face and dozed there just for a few moments. Sleep creep in. All of a sudden, I hear the alarm sound go off in the building. Not the alarm of anything violated or anything like that. It just let me know that somebody had entered the building, and that meant my boss was in the building. He was always the first to get there. And the alarm sound was when he ran his card through the security there. I got up, but somehow in the night, I must have broken my leg. That's what ran through my mind. Yeah. Okay. Now, I know that this has happened to you while you were doom scrolling in the bathroom, okay? Where you're just sitting there going through doom scroll, doom scroll, doom scroll, doom scroll. And then you get up and one of your legs will just not function. Seriously? Okay, you're grabbing a hold of walls and making sure you're just gonna make it to the door. And please, please, please don't let me fall down the stairs. Well, that's what had happened. And so I started dragging my leg helplessly towards the door. And I get to the door and I pull it towards me and I open it up, and there is my boss right in front of me. He says, "Keith, you okay?" "Yeah, fine." As I lean against the wall in an awkward position, just hoping that I can support myself on the one leg that is still useful. "Keith, you don't look quite right. You look a little peaked." I'm fine. I'm fine. "Go ahead and clock out," he told me. And then I said, "Yep, I'll do that just a minute. I'm just going to go head back in here and splash a little water on my face." I walked back into the bathroom there and I stood in front of the mirror, and then I saw what he had seen already. There was a huge handprint on the side of my face with fingers there so clearly etched from the place that I had been leaning so hard against it in my own little corner, in my own little place. I could be whatever I wanted to be. Oh, my boss never called me out on that one. He never reprimanded me. It never happened again either. I'll tell you that much for sure. Well, that's the third of the fourth of the patterns. You can fight, you can flee or flight, you can even faint, or you can just try to fake your way through the fear. Hey, I don't know which ones you've practiced in your life, and I bet you if you're just honest, you've probably gone through all four. Not everybody gets a chance to faint, but I did at least. But most of us have responded to fear in our lives in one way or another. And in fact, fear is sometimes one of the birthplaces of some trauma in our lives. And one of the things I've learned through a lot of the stories that have been told to me is that trauma is foundational to so many entry points for addictions, homelessness, to fears, to paralyzation, to the lives that we cannot break free from? He said lies, not lives. Lies we cannot break free from. Fear is foundational to so many of those elements. And it is really about finding the way through fear to conquer trauma. I have to tell you one other little story about my dad and I. See, at one point in my life, I went through a very difficult time with actually one of his employees. And there was a lot of trauma with that situation. And the trauma was starting to affect me and affect the people around me. I was just a kid. I was just 12 years old. But this predator had identified and begun to groom me as his target. I was paralyzed with fear in being around him. But something took place there that changed my life. I told my dad, and my dad believed me. I never saw that man either at work or in any sphere of my life. My dad made certain that I was safe and that he had listened to me. Can I tell you how important it is to have someone who will listen to you without judgment, without discounting your ideas or your trauma? And can I tell you how important it is for you to tell your story? It's what story mosaics is all about. Each one of us having these little fractals make up our own lives, but also make up the composite of our lives with one another. You see, when I tell you my story and when you tell me your story, whether they're humorous, serious, or sometimes even heartbreaking, there's healing, there's hope, there's a tomorrow that is attached to our stories. You know what? I want to thank you for laughing with me and maybe a few of you laughing at me. I want to thank you for listening, laughing with me, but also learning with me about the power of story. Thanks for joining us on Story Mosaics.